The book of Hebrews is a terrific chunk of scripture, and I promise you, in the next few weeks ahead, we're going to catch up on our Hebrews work in our series. But today, what we would normally call a sermon is actually going to be this good-looking squad telling some stories about Camden. If you haven't figured it out by now, this is Urban Promise Sunday. And some of you are probably wondering, what is Urban Promise, and why do they talk about it around here? It goes all the way back to a time when a friend of ours named Nadia was the director of short-term mission for the CBWC. And every now and then I would send her an email and I'd say, hey, do you have a trip you could send us on? Is there something we could do? And she would always say, well, everything I can think of sending you to do is still not as great as going and spending time in Urban Promise. And I thought, okay, I don't even know what this place is about. Some of you may remember we flew Nadia out here. We got her to introduce us to Urban Promise, and she took us down there on that first trip. Well, this is the fourth group that I've taken, officially the easiest group that we have ever taken down there. Who here has been on some sort of short-term missions project or church work group or... Okay, yeah, good number of you. You know then how a trip like this can go sideways, right? Sometimes the work you end up doing feels like a token make work project so people could feel like they did something. Anyone experience something like that? Or maybe the group itself just turned into this toxic wasteland of people that weren't getting along. Maybe you were on the trip and you had this big impression of what was going to happen and you got there and it felt like it was just sort of a thin facade of a thing. Well, that's not the case with Urban Promise. About 30 years ago, a guy named Bruce was talking to Tony Campolo, and he was super upset because he felt like he'd written this long letter to Tony Campolo and said, you come to our towns and you get us all excited about things, but then when it's actually time for the church to do any work in the world, nobody does anything. This is all a joke. How dare you get our hopes up? And Tony Campolo wrote him back and said, hey, I got some stuff you could do. Right across the river from Philadelphia is this place called Camden, New Jersey. And it's a dangerous, dirty, poor city. And they could sure use some help. So on a shoestring budget, the classic story, Bruce is famous for getting people to come and just be in his circle. He's got this terrific gravity well. Bruce usually starts off any talk he does with a goofy, awkward song that makes everyone feel a little bit awkward, kind of like our song. And there's a rich tradition there of sort of the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King sort of, his spirit breathes and is alive there. And a lot of the songs we end up singing in camps are sort of these traditional spiritual songs, protest songs, that sort of thing. But what happens at Urban Promise is that these neighborhoods that were full of violence and drugs, just generally unsafe places, would have these little island havens where the camp that would serve that neighborhood could be named as a place of safety and friendship and fun. And the really great thing is that there's like a project behind the scenes going on all the time. And initially, they were like, how do we get these teenagers who are selling drugs on the street, how do we help them out? How do we get them out of that life? Well, the street leader program was formed. So instead of just having a camp that's run by a bunch of outsiders, a lot of the people helping in the camp are street leaders, which are kids from the neighborhood who work their way up. And here's the really cool part. If they stick with it, by the end of that street leader program, there's scholarship money available to them. And they can go to school. They can go to college, which is, for a lot of them, that was a dream that they never thought was going to happen. And even better yet, if you look at the landscape of the people that work in Urban Promise now, there a lot of them are people that made their way up through that program. So I guess what we want to convey to you is that when you get to Urban Promise and you get to be a part of what they do, you just feel an immense sense of gratitude that while this hopeful work was happening in this sad place, you got to be a part of it. Even if it was a silly little piece of it, even if it was only for a couple of weeks, we got to be a part of that really great work. So you're going to hear some stories. Some of them are pretty intense. Some of them are kind of silly. And everyone's ready for this? Take a couple of deep breaths. I'm going to hand the mic, and you're going to hear some stories now.
everybody. My name is Grace, and this past summer, this was my second time going to Camden, and I always really enjoy these trips. I guess what we're kind of talking about today is just personal experiences, moments that we found a lot of joy in, and stuff like that. So one of the big things in Camden is the Croc Center, which is this big rec center that the kids go to every week during the summer, and they go swimming. So the Croc Center is this big facility, has a ginormous pool, and kind of just, it's a fun little space for the kids. It is funded by Joan Croc, who is this crazy rich person who has funded in these small towns in America these rec centers, 10 of them, and Camden, being one of the poorest cities in America, has one of these centers. So in these centers, once a week, the kids in their camps will go together, get on the big yellow school buses and sing songs and have fun, and they'll get all in their swimsuits and, we'll swim and have a good time. And so part of the thing that happens there is they have these, like, sing-offs or these chant-offs and stuff like that. So they'll be in their camps, and they all have these, like, fruit of the spirit, like Beth was talking about, names. So, like, peace and freedom and hope, grace, all these kinds of things. So, like the song that we sang earlier, they sing those against each other. So it's kind of this fun kind of, not rivalry, but it's a great way to get involved. Yeah, I mean, they're loud, and it gets, these swimming things are so hectic. The staff at the Croc Center don't really like the Urban Promise groups, simply because the kids, they let go and they have fun, and they're not paying attention to the rules, right? So you'll have kids climbing on you, you'll be wading through the pool, and you'll have kids on your back, and you'll be chasing kids, and it's just a great time. So these kids, they sing and yell and scream at each other, and it just becomes this huge kind of production where everyone is just, having a blast. And it's uncontrolled, kind of like, the staff do their best to kind of make sure it's a safe environment where kids aren't slipping and falling. It's a really good time. You have to be there to understand. I've tried telling stories to my parents about this trip, and same thing with 2 years ago. And it's so hard to just convey all the different emotions felt at the same time. And just even to depict the experience. Like, you have, 200 kids in a pool all at once? Like, that's a crazy number of people, kids aged, grade 1 to 8, and all the staff and street leaders. So lots of people and lots of fun and hectic kind of environment. So just trying to tell these stories, it's hard. So sending us there really gives us this unique experience that while we can try and share with you, we really, it's something that's, just kind of planted deep within us where we've really felt it. We've experienced something that I could never have experienced here, just with the energy that these kids have. You know, it's not something that you would think that would be something so readily available there, where there's so much energy and happiness, and statistically, it's not depicted as a warm, happy, loving, exciting, energetic place. But then, as soon as you get there, there's going to be kids talking about, safety and the environment that's there, the care that is given and received, and so it just really, these experiences aren't what they seem on the outside. And so we feel great to have this experience. So thank you for helping us get them.
Now, I don't really have anything heartfelt like that. I just thought I would present a highlight reel of Sam getting bullied by an 8-year-old kid, because it was hilarious. So there was this little kid, Damir, and like 2 days into our camp, he decided that he wanted to have Sam's hat all the time, no matter what. And he would like try and crawl under the table and pop up from behind him and grab it, or just like run up and say, "Give me that. Give me it," over and over and over. And when he finally got the hat off, like day 4, he saw Sam's curly little head and started calling him Nappy Boy, which I don't even really understand what that means. But it kind of culminated at the Croc Center, like Grace was talking about. There's this big, kind of like shallow wading pool, but it's got a current in it, so you can just kind of float and go around in a circle and watch all the insane chaos happening. And so on my first go-around, I saw Damir splashing Sam in the face. And then my second go-around, I saw him yelling at Sam that he wanted a ride from him. And then my third go-around, he had convinced both Sam and Tom to give him rides around the pool, to the point where if they weren't going fast enough, he would try and dunk their head under the water. And then the fifth go-around, he had basically... He had one arm on each of them, kind of like he was, you know, he had his horses in the traces, just like. It was, and it never ended up until the last day when Sam was like, "We're leaving." Tommy was like, "Good, but I'll see you on Monday, right?" It's like, "No." It's like, "Oh, well, I guess I'll miss you. Can I have your hat?" "No." "Okay, we're leaving now. Goodbye. See you later, Tommy. Bye-bye." That was my favorite part, was watching Sam bravely put up with this little kid who decided he was going to try and make his life miserable, but not really succeed because he's 8. And what can you do, you know?
In New Jersey, it was really hot there. Like, the hottest day that I got to was up to 42 degrees. And we all drank a lot of liquids, like water, sparkling water, Gatorade. And we drank so much that Simon and Jeremy had to go out almost every single day to buy more of it at a grocery store. And we all just drank so much water. But I was different from the other kids. If you went to a 7-Eleven or any kind of like convenience store, if you went to where all the drinks were, if you're lucky enough, you could find a gallon jug of Arizona iced tea. It was like, which I thought it was insane, because who would buy this gallon jug of iced tea? But then I saw the price. It was only $3 for this jug of iced tea. And I thought, should I get it? And I looked back at Simon, and all he was doing was just nodding his head up and down, urging me to buy this jug of iced tea. Walking in the 7-Eleven thinking I would come out with some kind of American chocolate bar or some type of candy. No, I came out with a jug of iced tea that was like only $3. I ended up drinking half of it and then regretting it and dumping the rest out and telling myself that I wouldn't get another one for the rest of the trip. About 3 days passed from originally getting this jug, and I convinced a few people to come to the 7-Eleven that was like not even a block away from where we were staying, telling myself, "Oh, I'll come out with candy this time, or a chocolate bar." No, they had different flavors of this jug. I came out with the jug again, and that time I actually drank all of it, which was kind of insane. And then again, I lied to myself saying, "Oh, next time we go, I'm not getting a jug. I'm not getting this jug." No, I came out again with another jug of iced tea. And again, I dumped the second half of it out because it was just so bad. And then, thanks for sending us. And after drinking all these jugs, they gave me the nickname of Jug Boy. And for the rest of the trip, they called me Jug Boy.
Okay. So my story is about a little girl named Winter. And so on the first day of camp, we walked into the room and I was terrified. There were screaming, yelling children running around everywhere. And so me, Alice, and Maggie all kind of were in this little huddle looking at each other, not knowing what to do. And then I remembered something Jeremy said that morning when we have morning kind of devotionals with all the rest of the work groups. He said, if you don't know what to do, like if you can't find anything to do, pick a kid and stick to them and hang out with them and stuff. So I was walking around and looking for a kid, and this little girl ran up to me and gave me the biggest hug, having no idea who I was. And then she just grabbed my hand and pulled me over to this big box of balls and frisbees, and we played for a really long time. And then after 2 weeks of getting to know her more and more every day, she turned out to be the most energetic and confident little girl. And it was just really cool to see the connection that she made with me, and just that she trusted me so much. And then on the very last day, she was like, when are you guys coming back? Like, I want to see you again. And it was just really cool to see that she wanted to hang out with me more, even though we were complete strangers 2 weeks ago. And I just want to thank you guys for donating all this money so we can make these connections and we can go back and build new relationships, but also revisit the old ones with some really great people in Camden. So thank you.
Hello. It was my first time going to Camden when we went. And the thing that stuck out to me the most, or was, I guess, the most significant thing for me, was the safety I felt being in Camden. I don't really have any funny stories, but yeah, the safety I felt. And like Jeremy said, it's such a safe haven. And being in the poorest city, or one of the poorest cities in America, when you're at the camps, you really don't feel like it. And it just felt really nice. And I was so thankful that these kids have this space where they can feel safe and they can play and learn. And because there's Urban Promise has schools too, and they teach kids elementary and high school, and they have a safe place to learn and have fun. And like, you feel safe, and the statistics tell you that you're not safe there, but you you feel like you are, which I was really thankful for that. And I also really, we stayed in a house that was on the Urban Promise campus called The Brick. Just The Brick, not like The Brick House, it's just The Brick. And we had a lot of fun times. It was, we called Sam Jug Boy the whole time. It was pretty great. And we put up, it was kind of badly decorated house. It's old, and some primary colors on the walls, and there was, in the living room, we put up an old sheet we found, and for some reason, there was nails and hammers everywhere. And so we put up an old sheet, and Jeremy had a projector, and we watched some shows, and there was only one bathroom. That was really horrible. we survived, but it was really, really horrible. We shared rooms. It smelled really bad by the end. It was disgusting. But, 40 degrees. It was... coming out of the JFK airport into New York after never experiencing that kind of humidity was like suffocating under a wet blanket while tumbling through a dryer. It was really bad. so, yeah, we had fun. We stayed together for 2 weeks, which is way too long for a group of teenagers to stay together at any point. But it was a really good experience, so thank you for sending us.
Okay, so at Urban Promise, there's a thing called Carnival, which happens once every summer. Yeah, and what happens is the work groups make carnival games, and the kids get to play them, and they win tickets that they can exchange for prizes. And to make the carnival games, we go to the basement of the main building, and there's a bunch of junk that we can make carnival games out of. And so when we went there, we were exploring and trying to find out what we wanted to do and the things we were going to use. And there were five bags of rubber ducks. There were so many ducks, and they were all numbered. They must have been from a duck lottery or something, where they put them in the river and you have a duck, and whichever one goes first, you win a prize or something. So they were all numbered, and there were so many ducks. And they wanted us to get rid of them. And we didn't actually get rid of them. They're still there, probably. So about half of the groups made carnival games using the ducks. So there were ducks everywhere. They were throwing the ducks. You were hitting the ducks. You were trying to get them out of a little pool. And, yep, there were just so many ducks. That's it. Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot to say, but I'd like to recount a couple different interactions I had with some people on the trip. Earlier on, when we first got there at one of the camps, we were probably doing something like art or something, doing some kind of drawing or craft with the kids, and one kid came up to me and asked a couple questions about where we live or where we came from, and he was asking if where we lived was like Camden, and I didn't really know how to respond. Because in a lot of ways it is, because a lot of the people there are really friendly and easy to know and easy to talk to, but sometimes they just, or not them, sometimes just the place they live is very, very different than where we live. And it's hard to tell at times, because the camps provided this very tight sense of security that you didn't really get. So I didn't really know how to answer. Another time, when on the Friday, one of the Fridays we were there, they had this event called Stomp. So all the street leaders would get together along with us, and we all just spent time doing weird games and talking later. And we had this huge long conversation about all the issues and all the struggles of Camden. And despite all of it, all of the street leaders still seemed hopeful that things would get better and still seemed hopeful that things would change. Which is a strange thing sometimes, because sometimes things almost seem hopeless. And on the last day when we were there, just before after we were done swimming, because our group had swimming on the last day, we all were told, or Tony went up and explained to everyone that it was the last day that we were going to be there. And so they all said bye, and then just before we were leaving, just some random little girl that I'd never talked to up in that point, didn't even recognize, just asked me if I was part of the work group, and I said yes, and she just walked up and gave me a hug and then walked away, and I never saw her again. It's just these little interactions throughout the entire trip that just kind of build your perception and kind of make the whole trip.
All right. Today I'm going to talk about one of the interactions I had with one of the kids there named Christian. So on the first day of going to the camps, I was really nervous that I wouldn't really connect with any of the kids or anything and just be awkward walking around, just kind of, I don't know, being like a wallflower or something. Yeah, that was one of my biggest fears about going on the trip was, I don't know, yeah. But on the first day was pretty much that until the end, where this kid, I forget exactly how it happened, but I ended up playing foosball with him. I think I beat him. But yeah, and so, Yeah, and so I just created this connection with him on the first day, which was really special for me. It really defied all my expectations of what the trip was going to be like and stuff. As the 2 weeks go on, I become better and better friends with this kid named Christian, who's actually the cousin of Winter, which I found kind of weird and freaky. One day, I forget which, he asked me if I was, like, going to move to Camden or something, like I was going to stay there permanently, and I was like, no, I'm just here for 2 weeks, and he even told me about, like, houses that were being sold by his house or something like that, and I felt really kind of sad that I had to leave him and stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. just thank you for donating and supporting us on this trip to Camden. It was really amazing. It's just got to create connections with some kids, and I really hope that I made a difference in his life. All right, thank you.
All right, hello. This is my third time going to Camden on this trip, and this time I went as a leader. And each time I go, I learn a little more about, like, the organization itself and how it works and the staff who are there permanently. And a lot of them are really amazing, and I can't talk about them all, so I'm just going to talk about Tony, who is the camp director at Camp Freedom, which is the camp I went to this summer and the last time I went. And each time you go to a camp, like, the kids are grown up, you might recognize some of them, and some of the street leaders stick around, but sometimes they cycle out, they go to a different camp, or they graduate, and the interns are different every year, but the camp directors pretty much stay the same, and they're just, like, incredibly passionate and devoted to their camps, and I, like, can't speak for the other directors, but I would definitely, like, say that Tony is, like, just maybe the best camp director. I don't know. It's pretty true. He's just incredible, and he has, like, this amazing devotion and dedication to Camp Freedom and making sure, like, every kid there gets, like, the best possible experience. And within Urban Promise, like, there's only so much that the organization does, and then Tony goes above and beyond the resources that are given to him, and he, like fundraises on his own, and he like bugs people for donations all by himself, and through that he's gotten a whole bunch of fishing rods, and he takes the kids fishing like a few days a week. One day we were there and the kids they were supposed to go swimming and it got canceled for some reason, and Tony was so devastated. And the next Monday we showed up and I walked in and Abby was like, we're going on the bus, we're going to go roller skating. And he was so sad that pool day got canceled that he went and he, like, contacted a whole bunch of people and got a roller skating day planned. And he's just like that. Like, he tries to find really great things for all the kids to do. Every year in the spring, he fundraises a whole bunch of money and he takes a big group of kids to Disneyland, which is just, like, something, like, none of the other camp directors do. And he does all the fundraising on his own. He, like promotes it on Facebook constantly, and he just, like, these kids get, like, an amazing experience that they probably couldn't have ever afforded on their own or within their own families, and he just makes it happen for them. And another, an experience that really embodies Urban Promise and, like, the spirit of the camp directors and Tony is Water Day, which happens at pretty much every camp, and it's just a day where all the games are centered around water. And at Camp Freedom, you're put into a team, and the teams, like, battle it out in these water-related games. And my favorite game is Battleship, and it's like and Camp Freedom takes place in a church smaller than this one, and they string up a big tarp, and they divide the church in half, and you sit on the floor so that you can't, one team on each side of the tarp, and you can't see the other side, and you throw water balloons over the tarp and you hope you hit someone. So it's Battleship, but life size and with water balloons. And it's fantastic. But just, like, the ingenuity and creativity in Urban Promise, it's just, like, incredible. They take, like, just, like, a bunch of kids and a church and not very many, like, toys and stuff, and they make something incredible, like Water Day. And it's just amazing to be a part of. And it couldn't happen with the incredible people who are there, like Tony and Jodina and Derek at Camp Saved that they got to meet. And they're just, like, incredible people who are so energetic and just, like, have incredible spirit that they bring to the camps. And yeah.
So I was extra lucky, and I got to spend my whole summer in Camden. So I was an intern. So I worked at Camp Freedom with Tony, who Beth was talking about. And I would go to the camps really early in the morning, like really early. And then there's kind of like this weird limbo time where me and one of the other interns would just play foosball for like an hour. And then the kids showed up, and there was games and just like chaos, like kids running, and you'll just be like standing there and you'll get hit with a ball. And then some kid will come and like just like grab it from you and keep playing their game. And then me and one of the other interns, Yejin, who is from South Korea, were paired together, and we taught the art class. So then I would teach these crafts, and we would paint, and we would draw, and just do whatever. And then it was lunchtime, and that's when the work group would leave, but I got to stay. And we would do all kinds of things, like we would go fishing. And one of my favorite stories about the fishing is you would go, and these kids would be so excited to fish, but they wouldn't touch the worms. And you get there, and they'd be like, Abby, like, can you put the worm on my hook? And then 3 seconds later, they come back, and this, like, perfectly strung up rod would be completely tangled, but they'd have a fish on it. And they'd be like, ah, like, get the fish off. And you'd be, like, trying to take a picture, and they're, like, screaming. And then you'd, like, hold the fish, and you'd be like, oh, and they would just, like, lose it because they just didn't want to touch the fish. And then you throw it back in, and then 30 seconds later, Abby, can you put a worm on my hook? And then you do it all over again. So I actually ended up living in one of the camps. So I lived in, like, the attic of Saved by Grace. So it was very interesting to live in fellowship and community with all the other interns. So there was 8 interns in my house from all over the world. So we had 2 of the African fellows from Uganda and 2 girls from South Korea, and then everyone else was from all over America. And I think that's one of the parts that you don't really get to experience when you're in a work group, because you're just in, you're in a house with your people who you've known for a long time. But I just kind of showed up, and I showed up late because I had diplomas. And I remember I was so nervous, and I woke up and I like slept in really late on the Saturday. And then I walked into the kitchen, and Andrew was just like cutting up a watermelon. He just like started talking, and then he just like started eating the rind of the watermelon. And he was like, it's really good for you. Like, this is what we do in Uganda. This has major, like, medical purposes. So we just, like, we're eating watermelon rind in the kitchen. And I think one of the things that kind of sums up the, like, experience of, like, how you get to bond with the kids is the pool day. So on the first week, you get there, and you're kind of like, oh, like, I don't really know what to do, and you just kind of, like, wait around. And I mostly hung out with Yejin. And then as it progressed, by the end of the summer, I couldn't walk a foot without someone either, like, jumping on my back, and then all of a sudden there's 3 kids on your back, and the lifeguard's yelling at you, or they do this thing, it's called, like, they slam you. So you'll just be walking, and then all of a sudden this kid will just, like, appear out of nowhere and, like, pick you up and just, like, throw you in the water. So it just, like, really shows the kind of relationships that you get to build. And I know one of the things I talked about before we were going was how you just pick one kid, but I got to pick multiple kids. So I'll tell a few stories about some of my favorites. So this is my 3rd trip, and the first time I was at Camp Peace, which is the younger kid camp, and then the next time I was at Freedom, and then I was at Freedom again. So I got to see some of the kids who I saw 4 years ago, when they were just like these little tiny kids in grade 1 or grade 2, and they had moved up in the program, and then I got to come back, and now they're in grade 5 or grade 6, and it was just so interesting to see that. And one of the kids who was my favorite, his name was Sharon, his nickname was Pricklebutt. So he's this like little tiny, a little bit kind of pudgy, and just really cute. And anytime We saw him, me and Yejin would kind of walk up and we'd just like start poking him. And he thought it was the funniest thing, and he would just giggle and we'd just be poking him. And then he would come to my art class and he was always so excited, and he was in the older boys group. Some of those boys really did not want to do the craft. They'd come in from rec all like hot and sweaty, and they'd be like, I'm not doing that, like this is stupid. But Sharon came every time with a good attitude, and he'd be like, Abby, look, I made you out of macaroni. Or he'd be like, Abby, come help me, let's make a paper chain. And I have these pictures, and it is like feet long of this paper chain that's like wrapped around his neck, and he's like this little pose, because he was just such a kind guy. And one of my other favorites, his name was Jediah, and he was just so loving. Like, anytime he came into camp, he would just, like, walk up and give you a big hug, and then he'd be, like, shaking everyone's hand and, like, saying hi to everyone. And there was one day we were sitting in art class, and one of the street leaders from the other groups had, like, walked by, and they said hi to him. And he just goes, oh, I just get so much love in this place. So it was just so nice to see that, like, he was having a really hard time at home, and he was living in the shelters, and one day he came in, and he was at breakfast, and usually he's, like, really happy and, like, all cheerful, and he was just really sad. And when I went over to him, and I was like, oh, Jediah, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, my mom's car got repoed today. So it was really interesting to see the, like, that sometimes they'll come to camp, and you don't know what's going on at home, but this place just offers a space for them to come and feel safe and just feel so much love. And I have one other kid who was my favorite, I think. Her name was Symphony, and she was way younger in the age group, so she wasn't actually supposed to be at our camp, but her two older siblings came, so she would just show up, and I think she was in grade 3, and everyone else was in, like, grade 5 to 9, and she would just come, and she would always want to play games. Every morning, we would play games, but she would just make up the rules, so we'd pick these board games, and we'd be playing Sorry, and she'd be like, I'd be, like, moving my pieces, and she'd be like, oh, no, you got to go back to the start now. I'd be like, oh, okay. Or there was this one game where you had pieces with letters on them, and you were supposed to make a word that started with the first letter and ended with the second letter, but she's in grade 3, so she couldn't spell, but she really wanted to play this game. So we would, like, get the letters, and she would be like, okay, you just got to make up a word. And I was like, oh, okay, you go first. So she gets, like, an A and a W, and she's like, ah. I was like, oh, okay, good one. And then it was my turn, so I would get these two letters, and it was just so fun to get to know all these kids and get to experience the, like, a more fuller version of Urban Promise, from the busy, long, long weeks to just hanging out. And I think this summer I want to go to Urban Promise International, and I would like to be the same thing, an intern, but I'd like to go to Uganda and do it there. And just, it was really nice of you guys to help fundraise and plant this seed so that we can experience the joys of Urban Promise and a mission trip and community and fellowship. So thank you.
None of them even told you about any of our work projects, which is interesting. So that's kind of great. They talked about the human connections they made. But there's been, 2 years ago, they gave us a whole bunch of pallets of paving stones. And they said, if you could just, like, move the paving stones off the pallets and into that area, our dream is to turn that into, like, a paved patio area. But then our group moved the stones and then paved the patio area. And so they must have been really impressed with our masonry and, I guess, tile work. Because this time we tiled, which I still can't, look at this gang. If you had three classrooms to tile, would you say, hey, let's get those teenagers to do it? Well, apparently they would, or promise, they would do that. Because that's what we did. We tiled two or three classrooms while we were there, which includes, anyone done any adhesive tiling? All that cut work around the edges and then the finicky cuts in the corners, which is always really great. If you, in all that heat and all of that stress, still get a terrific amount of great work in the afternoons for our work projects out of a bunch of kids. The miracle always is when I come home and the parents always say, you got my son to work? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know how that happened, but we did the work. And we always do a terrific amount of work. And because of our Canadian dollar, it kind of fluctuates. I always tell the people at Urban Promise that I'm going to try and pay our payment to them right when I can find the dollar at its highest point. And I'd kind of forgotten about it, and because lately the Canadian dollar hasn't been doing so well, I figured I should check in with them and remind them that I haven't forgotten to pay. And the response was, "Oh, we love you guys so much. We weren't worried at all. You can wait. Well, how about February 2019 is your deadline to pay us?" And I said, "We will most certainly pay you ahead of time." I think one of the cool things about being a Canadian group that goes to Urban Promise is they're used to having people who bring with them a certain amount of baggage owing to the history of race relations in America. And it's sort of it's kind of a great experience to be Canadians who just sort of show up and go, "Oh, that's a thing? Oh, yeah, that's fine." And just, we had a really great chance to shine while we were there. And you should be so proud of your teenagers, because they made me immensely proud. Simon and Beth, we had very little work to do in wrangling these kids this whole time. So thank you. Thank you so much. And maybe, do we want to clap for them for their stories? Is that a good way?